Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm here about the business. Ain't that right, Joe?
Joe Madden.
He's got that flair about him. When his name's announced, the place erupts all the time, but he's always in the middle of something good.
Manager for the Chicago Cubs.
And then Cliff and Shelley, the Penguins. I mean, all this stuff, the Penguins, like, pooped all over. They poop every 15 minutes, apparently. That's what Penguins do. All over the brand-new rug on the other side. That's what's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, I learned a lot from watching Joe.
Joe Madden with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Okay, nice.
Bernstein and McKnight doing overtime here on the Lawrence Holmes Show, so we get a chance to reconnect with an old friend. It is Joe Madden, who is on Twitter at Cubs Joe Mad with two D's. Joe, good to talk to you again. How are you?
Good, guys. You get overtime for this?
No.
Hazard pay.
Just do a favor.
Yeah. I'll talk to Bitch.
Thank you. We need all the help we can get. First things first, I was skeptical about the green olives on pizza thing, but you nailed it, man. You absolutely nailed it. I am a fan of green olives. I just had some worlds colliding there, but I got past it. I took the leap of faith, and you're on to something.
Thank you. Listen, I've thought that for a long, long time. Obviously, the Joe's Pizza at the Post with the sausage and the mushrooms. Yeah, it's really good, and really like a quality green olive also matters, so I'm pretty pleased with all of that.
Yeah, I think the level of heat in the sausage is critical, too. There's got to be a little aggressiveness there, and I love it.
Always aggressive. The Italian sausage, I mean, the mild sausage are some that just can't stand or take, you know, any kind of spice, but for me, a really good Italian sausage has to have a little bite to it.
Joe, before we get to baseball today, I was wondering if we could go back about a decade or so. We spent a lot of time on the show earlier reminiscing about Mark Burley's perfect game.
Oh,
you were there. It was 10 years ago today. What stands out to you first when you think about what happened 10 years ago?
The catch at the end of the game. You know, Ozzie put Wise. Was it Ozzie?
Yeah.
Was the manager?
Yeah.
Ozzie put Wise, I think his name was, into the game. And Gabe Kapler hit the ball really well. To left center. I thought it was a home run when he hit it. The other thing was just a bunch of ground balls. He just kept throwing ground balls. Are you still there?
Yep. Yeah, we got you.
Okay, no, I've got my headphones on and it kind of makes some noises. He just throws ground balls. He works quickly. It was a very frustrating kind of a day, but typical Burley game where he just kept throwing strikes. He just kept getting bad swings, and we didn't make any hard contact, I think, up until that last fly ball.
We were also looking at the improbability of it with your team near the top of baseball in team OPS, a near 350 on base percentage. The fact the White Sox used a lineup of some nobodies out there, like a Sunday day game after a night game kind of lineup in a park that had balls flying out of it even back then, and a guy who didn't really have a high strikeout rate, you would have gotten astronomical odds on a perfect game going into it.
Yeah, the ball had to be put in play at people a lot. I think it was. I mean, I don't even know if you took it the breakdown. Wasn't there a lot of, like, just ground balls at not really well hit at shortstop? I thought that game. Who's not a Burley fan? I mean, the guy was always that good. He went through a period there where he kind of went backward for a bit, but I thought he reinvented himself nicely. Got to be with him in an All-Star game, I believe. Also, just a wonderful young man. So you're right. I mean, in a sense, it is surprising based on the kind of pitcher he was and the kind of offense that we had. But, I mean, as a Rays manager, man, I went through a perfect game in Seattle against Felix Hernandez also, and went against Dallas Braden, also an unlikely perfect game in Oakland. So the part about that group also was anytime we had a perfect game thrown against us, we probably went to the playoffs. So I took it as a good sign.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Your Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves will open the season on Saturday, October 5th for group and season tickets. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. Obviously a tough one last night. Yet another blown save for this bullpen. There's a couple of storylines we want to get into. First of all, the individual struggles of Pedro Strop and how you're going to handle that, finding a proper leverage situation for him to get himself right. And then what it's saying about the depth or lack thereof in your current bullpen.
I have this, when Pedro's in a game, I really feel good about it. We all do. And I think last night it was more about pitch selection than it was necessarily his stuff. He's like one pitch away from getting out of that thing. You had, if you replay it and look at it, you saw the hit by Sandoval. That ball literally almost bounced. It really did. And it almost hit his back foot. I don't know how he kept that ball fair, but he did. Good for him. And then Crawford, it's this low ground ball up the middle that gets between two guys that are outstanding infielders. And that's a hit. And then, of course, the last hit is the one that really is the more concerning one from Pedro's perspective. And that's just like, I think he was talking, the sinker didn't sink. And he's got such an impressive breaking ball right there that he stayed away from. So for me, sometimes it's more about pitch selection. Execution of a pitch is always a component of it. But his slider is so good. And to hit the ball where Slater did was everything was really unlikely. So I don't think Pedro's that far off, maybe the velocity down a little bit. But more than anything, to utilize his cutter slider and really getting that to where he wants. So those are the devastating pitches about his performance. So with that, that was my bigger concern last night. Just he had a chance to put the guy, and it was a bad count for him, but with the base open, everything going on, it was just more about the fastball not doing what he wanted to do, I thought. But moving forward, Pedro, like last night, for instance, just to give you the full disclosure, Kinsler had to be up and in. I didn't want to warm him up and not use him because that could have impacted today's game also. So had we tied the score, he was going to go in and start the ninth, and then you keep Kimbrel back. There's all this little nuance going on, too. And, Stropey's the kind of guy that can get himself in and out of trouble. So there's all this little subplots going on, and the big thing is just about location of his pitches.
Do you need another lefty?
It's always nice. I mean, you look at this team that we're playing right now, and again, we did bring Ryan in to get out of a pretty critical moment, and that's the guy that's done a great job for us, is Kyle Ryan, when he came in and got the double play on Sandoval. See, the type of game that was yesterday, having a lefty in the middle and having a lefty towards the end of the game against this team could be very helpful. Then you go play a team like the Brewers, for instance, it might not be as vital to have the two lefties. It just depends. Kinsler's good on lefties. Cishek, we liked him on that part of the batting order. Yesterday, we liked him on belt, and it worked out well. So there's some of our righties that get out lefties well, too. But, yeah, when you're facing a lefty-dominant team like the Giants are right now, and although they will pinch it, and you have to be wary of that, too. But, of course, you can never say that you don't like two lefties in the bullpen. But Kyle Ryan's done a great job. We have some righties that can get lefties out also.
When you talked about Craig Kimbrel just the other day, you mentioned kind of being, he's ready to pitch a little bit. Lester Strode talked about that some too. What is your appetite going forward for using Kimbrel in maybe some more than three out situations?
Appetite's not there yet. He still needs time. He threw, like you saw the other day, he 2 days, day off, and then threw two more consecutive days. And the fourth day out of five was probably his best stuff. The big thing with him is just to listen to him. I've talked about this before with veteran relief pitchers. These guys know their body. They know their arm really well. And he was insistent that he was good on Sunday. And that's why we used him on Sunday. Saturday going into Sunday, because it was 4 out of 5 at that point. But I don't think it's the right time to do that. I don't want to do that. For me, to get to that point, it's got to be more crucial. And I would say from the middle of September on, when the guy's truly stretched out and he's truly in a good moment. But in the meantime, we got to eat those outs out. Because I know if we do that now and it doesn't play, it's just going to be a negative as we move it forward.
Robel Garcia continues to be the equivalent of the crumpled up $20 bill you find in an old pair of jeans in the back of the closet right there in the front pocket. And it's now sort of on you to make sure that as the adjustments come, as there's more video, as there's more of a body of work, that you keep putting him in situations where he has a higher likelihood to succeed. How are you going to do that?
Well, just watching it very closely right now. I mean, I like his swing from both sides of the plate. This is one of the few switch hitters that truly looks the same on both sides. He has the same kind of pop almost an identical path and swing, the way he starts to bat. Everything about it is very similar. So you're right. I mean, it's just a matter of putting him on the right guys. But overall, the way we're swinging the bats right now, I'm probably going to get him out there as often as we possibly can. The difference has been that his defense seems to be really settling in. When I first saw him, I thought he's a little bit hard-handed. Mm-hmm. And that was probably just nerves, because more recently, heck, he turned a double play last night. He threw the ball really well, really a lot more confident and smooth on the grounded ball, and presenting his hands really well, stuck into Mark Lowe, Loretta on the bench about that as we're watching the game last night. So the big thing with me is that he seems to be more adept at second base than I thought originally. From the bat side, he fouled some pitches off right-handed last night, which he needed to hit. It was against Pomeranz, I think. And so you can't foul your pitch off. He did. I think he had it twice in the same at-bat, and then he got him on a breaking ball down. But bat speed's there. Shortness is there. Pop is definitely there. So we'll just keep putting him out there. And because right now, among all of our guys, he's as interesting as it gets with power and consistent at-bats.
Joe, Addison Russell has had a tough time with the mental aspect of things, it seems. I mean, whether it's mistakes on the base paths or throwing to the bases or missing signs or what have you, it seems as though, I'd love to have you term it. What can he do to make sure he's sharper there? What can you and your staff do to help him get there?
Honestly, it's really in the player's hands at this point. He's been here for several years, and I assure you the conversations have been there constantly. We've worked through this in the past with him, and at some point it's up to the player to make these adjustments too. Because staff-wise, I know I was there. I mean, the conversations between he and I, and also infield coaches and base running coaches, we've had these conversations. We just need to get Addy to. It's more of a how do you go through the permutations mentally before the play occurs? How do you visualize in advance? And that's what I'm really, really after, is that to get him to the point where he sees things before they occur, which would equal focus. And so that's where we're at. I talked more about his hitting yesterday by the cage. I just wanted to speak with him yesterday, and I did. He got the nice base hit to right field in the latter part of the game. But more than anything, he's so talented. He's a really great athlete. People have no idea. But from the beginning, he's had issues on the bases. And so from the time I've known him, we've really been into it a lot from the from that perspective. And I had this conversation in the press room the other day. I've had guys, I didn't tell him the player's name, but we brought a guy with the Angels instructionally when you're just to run the bases. Don't even bring your glove or bat. You're just coming here to run the bases. Mm-hmm. And this guy left instructionally no better than when he showed up. Some guys just have a hard time with that. So you have the conversation has to continue, but in a lot of these situations, and sometimes it's not necessarily reported in this way, but the player has to be responsible for his own actions too.
How does the conversation and playing time work out for you? Is that a conversation that can be had and understood without playing time for Russell?
Well, right now, I mean, he sees that, again, Garcia's playing again tonight against Bumgarner, hitting right-handed. I talk to him, and I really, in situations when they're struggling like this, I do like to give them a couple, 3 days off just to so that they can think it through all the way, slow things down a bit, and maybe come back regrouped. So, again, our guys saw the three lineups for this series in advance as of Sunday night. I've been staying with that concept all season long. So everybody knows what's going on in advance. So if you have a bad day, you still may be playing tomorrow because you've known that in advance. You could have a good day and have tomorrow off because you've known that in advance. And that was a sticking point with some of the guys in the past, and just trying to work through that mental concept. Again, trying to ameliorate their minds in a sense because they have a tendency to think the wrong thing. So all this stuff is in place. Everybody knows what's going on. And now it's, again, sometimes it's up to the individual more than it is to the coaching staff.
What is Tyler Chatwood's role right now?
Trying to get him in the other day, man. I had him warm up twice, and he threw, I think, a total of like 60 or 50 pitches in the bullpen. I want to get him in. The part that works against him is he's our length. So you're always in the close games when it's 1-1, 2-1 late in the game, there's a potential for extra innings, and this is where he comes in handy. So you have to look at what you got going on that day. Do you have any length at all? Do you have to save him for length, or could you pop him earlier in the game and give him a different kind of role? With him, I try not to make it just one hit, one time through the batting order. So you got to look at where you're at in the lineup. There's all these little nuance concerns. So he's throwing the ball well. And yes, we need to get him out there, and who knows what he's going to be able to do in the latter part of the game. But he does provide length for us, and I'm really wary of that on a nightly basis.
You've talked a lot about the struggles against left-handed pitching, and even guys who generally have been good at it, like Rizzo, have not been. Have you dug in a little bit as the old hitting coach, where your doctorate is, to see if there's any shared trait, anything that's going on that has caused this systemic issue?
I have looked, and I'll tell you, the biggest thing that my biggest concern is just staying organized in your strike zone, if anything. I'm looking at Bumgarner, for instance. I was looking at his video, and for the most part, he's going to try to get people out of the zone, both righties and lefties. We've been really too cooperative with that. So I think more than anything, whether right or left-handed, and I think when it comes down to facing the lefties, we've been way too cooperative with that also. We just got to make sure that you force these guys in the zone and you accept your walks if that's what they want to do. For instance, last night I said Bodie also had a nice at bat, and he kept fouling his pitches off against Pomeranz and then struck out on a breaking ball in the dirt. So when you see the pitch that you like, it's got to be hit hard and kept fair, and that's not happening consistently. And then you have to be able to keep your organized strike zone to the point where you force them to the next pitch. But again, you talk about systemic, that's industry-wide. I mean, that's you watch games constantly, and I'm watching video all the time, not only us, but the inability to stay in your strike zone because nobody's into making adjustments as much anymore. Everybody's just wanting to hit the ball in a gap or over the wall. And the single is really a lost art. And I think part of all that, like last yesterday, Albert got that nice little base hit to right center that scored a plate at Rizzo. That was outstanding. But we don't do that often enough. And eventually Rizzo, after KB stole the bag, put a double in the left center field gap. Beautiful. But I think that's the biggest thing. The single is almost like it's like the penny. You just can't find them anymore. And I really want our guys to be aware of that. You make this mental and physical adaptation later in the at-bat, lay off the bad pitch, move the baseball, take your single. Early in the count when you're in your favor, go ahead and drive the baseball. Absolutely. But you watch games, man, and break it down and slow it down. Organized strike zones are a thing of the past, and the single, nobody wants them.
Joe, I was watching Martin Maldonado work behind the plate just the other day, and you can really see him use the Dixie Cup thing you talk about a lot, the wide cone that narrows back to the chest. I mean, it's pretty obvious in his work. What will it be like trying to balance three catchers with the way Martin works defensively? How soon are you, or how close are you, rather, to having to make those calls about balancing three catchers in a lineup?
We're real close. Wilson's real close, and so we'll see. But you're right about Martin, and again, when you watch that video, watch how quiet he is.
Oh, yeah.
Go back and get an old video of Jay Molina, Jose Molina.
Okay.
Real similar. And actually, that's what you're looking for. Everybody's teaching this movement about, like, they have their glove on the ground and they're kind of bringing it up as the ball is being thrown. I don't get that. I really don't get that. I don't even know why that's deceiving umpires. There's so much movement involved. I love Martin's method. That is the Jay Molina method. That's the method that I had been taught years ago, where you're going to sit up on the corner, you put your cup on the corner, you angle your outside shoulder in to present better to the pitcher and to the umpire. That's where the ball is going to look more like a strike than a ball. And then it's also where you keep your hands stronger so that the speed or the movement of the ball doesn't push you out of the zone. Just imagine if the ball's on the outside corner to a right-handed hitter, the catcher angles his right shoulder, angles back towards the middle. It's easier to keep that ball in the corner better. Say left on left, the catcher again goes to the left side of the plate, turns his left shoulder in, so you're almost at a slight angle to the corner. That's how you hold your corner better, and you stay quiet, and that's how you catch the low ball. So yeah, you're right, man. Kids wanting to catch, watch that videotape, man. That stuff is good. And then if you want to go back about 10 years or so, watch Jay Molina, and want to go back further than that, watch Booney, and all those dudes are really a quiet setup.
I asked this question of Theo last week. I will ask it of you. How excited are you allowing yourself to get about the previous two starts by Yu Darvish?
Yeah, I'm liking it a lot, and I am. I'm eager to watch this tonight again. He's just been different. I mean, in all the best ways. He's finally feeling comfortable in his Cubs skin. I think it took him a while to adapt and adjust to Chicago. And the expectations. This guy's he's an open book. He'll tell you exactly what he's feeling all the time. He never hides that, you know, to his credit. I mean, that's just who he is. And maybe sometimes people don't quite understand that because sometimes you're probably supposed to. be more machismo and hide your feelings, but he's open. So I think right now, you're seeing the emotion on the mound, you're seeing the assertiveness, the aggressiveness on the mound, you're seeing the high-quality pitches on the mound. And so, yeah, I think it's sustainable. Absolutely, I do. He's got that kind of stuff, man. The biggest difference to me is that the fastball, he knows where his fastball is going now. He knows where it's going. And then you do that, and all of a sudden the slider, cutter, split that he throws becomes even better than that. So, yeah, I think it's sustainable with you.
So, Joe, I'm just trying to follow protocol here, but as I understand it, listeners have submitted questions into the box here, and we wrap it up with a question from the box. Have I got it right?
That's what's been going on.
Okay, I got one for you. This one you may have to edit a little bit. What is the weirdest thing a guest has done at your house?
The weirdest thing a guest has done at my house.
That's what Joe's box came up with today.
Well, it sounds like it comes from some kind of perverted family.
It could.
Yeah, I mean, because the weirdest thing somebody's done at my house. Wow. I would just like sometimes when if you don't know somebody that they just isn't there something off limits about just opening a fridge without permission?
Yes.
You know, I mean, I think that's about as weird as it's got. I mean, nothing's happened in the bathroom or in the bedroom or anything like that. I think the weirdest are, you know, when the buddy comes in or the guy you know from high school and he just walks into the fridge, who cares? But when the first time guest just happens to stroll in, there's something sacred about having to be invited to open the fridge unless you've known the kid since the sixth grade.
Couldn't agree more.
Unless you said, look, you know, make yourself at home.
Yeah, beers in the fridge.
Mi casa, su casa kind of thing. Unless that's actually said, that would be an imposition to walk over to the fridge. I got you.
I think so. But I think also on that line, I mean, the greatest compliment is when somebody just falls asleep after a good meal on your couch. I love that. You know, somebody just gives it up, falls asleep. They like your place. They feel comfortable. I take that as high praise.
You got to have a good couch for a good nap like that, too.
Oh, we do, brother. We do, man. The couch in Hazleton, brother, you could nod out in a heartbeat.
Does it have the plastic cover on it from the mom?
No, yeah. No, Beanie wanted me to do that, but I said, come on, Mom, we just get a new couch if we mess this one up.
Joe, thank you. It was good to catch up again. Good to talk.
All right, guys. You guys be well. Thanks.
That is Joe Madden.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.